Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at the Graymere Church of Christ.
Scripture reading this morning will come from Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 18 through 26. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 18 through 26. Then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toiled, and in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore I turned my heart to despair of all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill. Yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. For what has a man for all his labor and for the striving of his heart, with which he has toiled under the sun? For all his days are sorrowful, his work burdensome. Even in the night his heart takes no rest. This also is vanity. Nothing is better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. For who can eat, or who can enjoy more than I? For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight. But to the sinner, he gives the work of gathering and collecting, that he may give to him who is good before God. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind.
This year, we're thinking about what it means to live a life in balance. And this is kind of our key verse we're going to come back to. So if you would, let's say this together. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God? Micah 6:8. As we think about what it means to live in balance, we're going to be going the next Sunday mornings over some different areas, aspects of our life as we grow that challenge our ability to keep things balanced. Now, this may not be one of your favorite game shows of all time, but I know for me, when I was growing up especially, whenever we'd visit either set of my grandparents, one of the things that we did, both places, is we would watch The Price is Right. Now, I don't know if that's something you've watched. But I used to love, I got to where I could predict when Bob Barker was going to announce there was a new car they were giving away. You know, there was a little different tone of voice. He'd build it up a little bit. Then I could know he's about to point to a new car and there'd be this new car that was there. And so I got to where I'd watched it enough where I had a good handle on that. But I've never been good at the pricing game. Now, if you haven't watched much Price is Right, you know that the way you get on stage is you're able to guess closest to the price of an actual object. And so now if you're the third or fourth that goes in a line, you just listen to someone else's guess and add a dollar or subtract a dollar. It's a little bit of strategy there. But if you're the first one, you've got to know exactly what that price is or have a pretty good idea. And I never knew any of those things growing up. I'm still not very good at estimating those things. But all the games eventually come down to being able to know how much something costs. In fact, it wasn't too many years ago when there were a couple of people that got in trouble because they realized over the years that The Price is Right kept using the same items. And so they memorized the items and memorized their prices. And one contestant was able to guess the very end, the showcase, where they put all these prizes together. He was able to guess exactly what the amount was. And so they had to start changing things. They had to be a little more unpredictable. Because the people who came in and they knew how to assess what the price was, and they knew how to say, this is worth that, those are the ones that can be successful. And as we start thinking about balance and as we start thinking about life, a lot of life boils down to me lining up my priorities and being able to assess which one is worth more than the other. What price tag do I put on this? But what value do I place on this? And Brian just read for us from Ecclesiastes chapter 2, And especially at the beginning of this Old Testament book of wisdom literature, the author of Ecclesiastes, referred to in the text as the teacher or the preacher, most often associated with King Solomon, and his life really fits with the Ecclesiastes author. As we look at the way Ecclesiastes moves through different aspects of life, you could almost describe it as switching the price tags on different things that are important to us. And so, as we start reading through, if you look in chapter 1, we read about wisdom. Wisdom is important. We place a lot of value on wisdom. But there's a word that keeps coming up, meaningless. This vanity of vanities, that kind of phrase shows up all through Ecclesiastes. Literally the idea of almost a mist or a vapor that evaporates quickly. And so Ecclesiastes will take things that we place a lot of value on and say, is that really the right price for that? Or in light of life, should we switch that around for a price tag that says vanity or meaningless? In chapter 2, we read about pleasure and possessions, things, stuff that we have. We put a lot of value on that. Ecclesiastes 2 says maybe we should switch those prices. One of the games in The Price is Right that gets you to the next prize is when they'll have someone who goes up on the stage and there'll be some big prize that's there, that's just there for the taking. But in order to get that prize, they've got to correctly price these other little items, like a can of soup or, you know, a household appliance. They've got to match up these prices, and they've only got a certain amount of time. In fact, a lot of their games are like that, where you're timed and you've got a row of things and you've got to figure out what goes with what. It's almost as if the Ecclesiastes author is saying, if you want to really get what it means to serve God, you need to understand how these other prices change in light of serving Him. The end of Ecclesiastes will focus on the sum total of man, to fear God, to follow His commands. But it's right in the middle of this section that's challenging the values we put on different things that we read the passage that starts in verse 18 about work. And so we're going to spend some time this morning thinking about how we balance our lives and the work that we do, the job that we do. Now, when we talk about work, I want to be really clear that when I say the word work, I'm referring to whatever our vocation may be. A vocation, an activity during the day, doesn't always carry with it a paycheck. And so there are some in this room that have a job that you go to every day. Maybe you even clock in, or you've got an office where you work, you check in with the supervisor, and you get a regular paycheck. There are others of you that do things during the day, vocationally, that your vocation, your calling, and your activity doesn't come with a paycheck, but it's still work. It's meaningful work. And so no matter what stage of life any of us are in, we can substitute in our mind our daily vocation with the term work when we're thinking about balance between our work and our lives. If you're still in school, that can be your vocation. That's your focus right now, your work. If you're retired from the job where you got a paycheck for years, you still know what you fill your days with is your vocation, your work. And chances are you still have goals and things that you're focused on that take effort every single day. So as we focus on this balance, we hear a lot about work-life balance. And sometimes that can be a little frustrating. Because if you are, for example, working in a specific occupation, there are going to be times where things are just busy and you can't balance it out very well. If you're someone whose primary job is preparing taxes, you're going to have a busy few months. Maybe you already are busy, but there's going to be a time of the year where it's going to be hard to balance things because you're constantly working to get things done. If you run your own business, there are going to be times where if you have employees that move or that leave, all of a sudden you've got to pick up the slack. So we can't always have the 50-50 equal balance we'd like to have. But what could change in our perspective to help us view our vocations differently and help us see the right price tags, the right priorities in our lives? I think if we look at this text, we can see some valuable things that are backed up all throughout Scripture. And so if you haven't already turned to Ecclesiastes chapter 2, I hope that you will, because we're going to see a couple of ways in which this passage helps us adjust and maybe even correct our understanding of work. And so he starts off in these first few verses. Notice how the author will describe the way in which, while the work we do eventually goes to someone else. Starting in verse 18, "Thus I hated all the fruit of my labor, for which I had labored under the sun. For I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool? Yet he will have control over all the fruit of my labor for which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun. This too is vanity." There's that word again. And then notice in verse 20, "Therefore I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun. For when there is a man who has labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and he gives his legacy to one who has not labored with him, this too is vanity and a great evil." Now, it's really interesting if we think about this in light of Solomon and what would happen with his son, Rehoboam, who seems to not deal wisely with what he has been given, at least not listen to the wisdom that was offered to him. But can you relate to what these verses are telling us about? There's a point in which he was working and he said, you know, I worked really hard on this, and then it dawned on me, I have no control over what happens after I'm done with this. We like to be in control. And it's a sobering thought to realize, you know, I might think that I've got this all worked out just right, and I've got the ideas of how this needs to go, and maybe I've been working in this job a long time, and I've got this done, but you know, someone else is going to come after me. After I leave, after I move, after I retire, someone else is going to come in, and I won't have control anymore. That's hard, isn't it? It's hard to adjust to that idea of losing control over an aspect or an area of our life, especially when we've become accustomed to it. And so these verses record him saying, I thought about that, and when I thought about that, then I started saying, well, what's the point of all this work that I'm doing? What's the point of all this labor? This, it seems like vanity. Verse 22, "For what does a man get in all his labor, and in his striving for which he labors under the sun? Because all his days, his task is painful and grievous. Even at night, his mind does not rest. This too is vanity." Now, doesn't that sound like a great hook in a job description if you're looking for an employee? You know, hey, come work for us. All your days will be grievous. At night, your mind won't be able to rest. It's all vanity. Come work for us. This is going to be great. At this point, we might think, well, is does work even matter? I mean, according to the way it's described here, is work something that we need to figure out how to get out of? And I know we joke a lot about work and about our having to do things and wanting to rest and relax, but that is sort of, in our culture, the idea that work equals negativity, work equals bad. I want to figure out how to get out of it. But then there's an interesting verse here in verse 24. "There is nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen, that it is from the hand of God." I think that's worth noting. That there's a sense of satisfaction, he says, that can come, and it can be good and it can be enjoyable. And by the way, what's good and enjoyable about work is from the hand of God. He says, "For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? For to a person who is good in his sight, he is given wisdom and knowledge and joy, while to the sinner he is given the task of gathering and collecting, so that he may give to one who is good in God's sight. This too is vanity and striving after the wind." So he says, okay, there's an aspect of work that is good that comes from the hand of God, but you know, I see people who are good, and God is giving them responsibility and giving them things. And I see sinners, and maybe ultimately the things that they've collected won't ultimately give them satisfaction. But of course, we can look around in our lives today and see people who aren't doing what's right, but are gaining a great deal of material wealth. So what do we do with all this? How do we take this piece of wisdom literature? It's part of a larger issue, and to really understand that, I'd have to read the whole book of Ecclesiastes, because it's a continual argument that's being made toward the end. But in these comments about work, what kind of insights can we gain? I think there are a couple of things that we can take with us this morning that hopefully will help us live lives that are in balance. And the first is that work is valuable when defined by God. Work is valuable. It's good for us to work. In fact, if you go all the way back to the beginning of the book of Genesis and really the beginning of humanity, when God creates man and places Adam and Eve in the garden, from the very beginning, they're given a vocation. They're given a task. They're given a calling in life, specific responsibilities in the garden. Genesis chapter 1 tells us that not only does he place Adam and Eve in the garden, but they are to fill the earth, to subdue it, to be over creation. God gives Adam the responsibility of naming the animals. Now, it's not that God couldn't have done that, but from the very beginning, we see that God, who is powerful enough to create the world, entrusts in humanity a vocation, a job, work to do. Not because God couldn't do it, but because God's plan as creating human beings, mankind, is so that we will have a vocation, that we will have a calling and work to do. In fact, if we look through wisdom literature, we constantly see reminders that we need to not only be working, but that we need to be working hard. In fact, if you look at Proverbs, for example, there are several Proverbs that sound like Proverbs 21, verse 25, that tells us the desire of the sluggard leads to death. But Proverbs 12:11 says those who are willing to work will be able to live. Or maybe we think about Paul's word to the Colossians in Colossians 3, that whatever we do, we are to do it for the Lord. Work is valuable. I don't need to go through life trying to avoid work, or trying to say that a job or a vocation is just something I have to do. It's important to note that work was there at the beginning. And even when sin enters into the world, when Adam and Eve choose to disobey God, and when they're going to be cast out of the garden, and now the world is under a curse, work is not a part of that curse. It existed before that. Now, work changes. All of a sudden, it's going to take a lot of sweat and toil for Adam to be able to get crops to grow. And so it's not that that work is unaffected by it, but it wasn't created by the fall. It's not a consequence of sin. It's a part of God's design for us. I know sometimes you might feel after an especially stressful time that it would be great just to kind of crash and just to lay down and sleep for days, depending on how stressful what you've been through is. And rest is important. We need to take care of ourselves. But you know, at some point, we have a desire to do something, right? To fulfill a kind of purpose. At some point, we want to feel productive, that there's something we're doing with our time. I think when we feel that, we're getting that sense of how God created us with a vocation. But if you notice, work is valuable when it is defined by God. It's easy for us to come up with our own definitions of what work should be like. And it's easy for us to start overloading ourselves with the idea that we just need to constantly do more. You know, I know that I'm doing this, but I need to figure out a way to do more. I need to figure out a way to constantly put more on my plate. So maybe I've got this, and this is what I need, and this is what all my family needs. But you know, if I just did more, I could make more, and then we could have more. Now, we've got to do what we need to do to take care of our family. I understand that. But that little desire for more can really cause us to push ourselves sometimes. Or maybe it's not about the money we might earn. Maybe it's about feeling a sort of status if I get to be in charge of a lot of things. And so I want to spread myself so thin, and I want to keep doing more and keep putting things on my plate that I'm not able to do really anything very well. I can feel overloaded. Now, there are times life seems to put some things on us that can overload us, but there are times that we might put some things on our plate that overload us as well. I was trying to think about a way to illustrate the feeling of being overloaded. And I was thinking about a passage in a book that was written years ago in 1990 as David Tate was an NFL player who discussed something that really hurt. And what he discussed that really hurt in an NFL game was not a big hit. It was not a big tackle. In fact, it wasn't even a play on the field. It was what would happen in the locker room. You can imagine in a football game, you've got a lot of players that are giving each other a hard time. Tate was a member of the defensive secondary, and so they would sometimes give the bigger linemen a hard time. And what would happen is, when that got to a certain point, those big linemen would take the smaller defensive backs and would splash them. And what that meant was, they would take Tate, and he described what it was like to be held on the ground by William Refrigerator Perry. And we've got a picture of him right here. You imagine him holding you on the ground, and then he falls on top of you. So now you've got 320-pound William Refrigerator Perry on you. On top of him would be Richard Dent at 270 pounds, piles on top of him. Then Dan Hampton, who jumped on top of him. And then Steve McMichael, who jumped on top of him. Now, can you imagine all four of those guys on top of you, all of their weight? That's an incredible feeling of being overloaded and possibly injured by something that didn't even happen on the field. I guess that was a really good way to stop these smaller guys from giving you a hard time in the locker room, if you just piled on top of them. Have you ever woken up on a Monday morning and got out of bed and felt like you had this amount of weight, over 1,000 pounds of weight carrying on your shoulders, and you felt overloaded? There are times that life and circumstance do that to us, and we can't do anything about it. We have God to help us get through those times, but it's hard for us to control. There are other times when I start taking on responsibilities, and I start taking on things, not because it needs to be done, but because there's something I want, and then because of that, I'm carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders. Work is valuable, but work is valuable when it is defined by God and in those limits. And something else that we find out in Scripture is that relationships are valuable. Relationships are valuable, and relationships are valuable because they're given to us by God. God has given us these relationships and tells us how to guide them. From the very beginning of Genesis, as we just mentioned, God creates Adam, but it wasn't good for Adam to be alone. Adam needed someone with him. And not only do we see the beginning of the covenant of marriage there in the book of Genesis, but we also see that it's just not good for human beings to be alone. We need relationships with each other. We need to be connected with other people. And so whether you're married or not, the issue is not that everybody has to be married. The issue is human beings need relationships. We need friendships. Think about the way in which God chose to save us. He puts us in a church. He puts us in a family where we're relational and where we can lean on each other and we can have those kinds of connections. Those relationships are deeply, deeply valuable. In fact, that's why we have Jesus when he says what the greatest command is, to love God with all of your being, your heart, soul, mind, and strength. But the second is like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. How many times in Jesus' ministry is his focus on helping people understand how they need to treat each other? Relationships are valuable, and they're guided by God. And when they're lived in light of God's guidance, we see something incredibly fulfilling. Now, when relationships aren't lived by that guidance, when we don't consult God for the way we need to conduct ourselves, that's when relationships can really turn sour. When we decide that God's boundaries for sexual ethics, God's boundaries for moral ethics, when we decide those aren't all that important, all of a sudden our relationships suffer, our families suffer, our friendships suffer. In fact, our relationships with people we work with matter. I don't know if you've thought about it this way, but if you work at an office or if you have a place where you're surrounded by coworkers during the day, you know, God loves those people so much that he has placed you right in there alongside them. You have an opportunity to love them, to show them God's love, to reach out to them, to encourage them. Think about the potential that can happen when they encounter a Christian man or woman that is serving God faithfully and loving them faithfully. When relationships are guided by God, we see their value. We see the richness of those. And so let's put those two things together and see a key to balance that we can come up with. If we know work's not bad, if we know work's not evil, and we know relationships are good, what can we do to help maintain that balance? We need to realize that what we gain in relationships, the people that we love, are more important than the things that we get from work. The relationships we have in life are more valuable than the things we get from work. To me, that's a principle that helps us line things up properly. That when God creates us human beings to have relationships with other human beings, that those relationships are more valuable than the things that work can give us. Maybe you've heard the expression that we need to love people and use things, but we often use people and love things. Ever thought about that? When I look at a thing, when I look at something God has given me and I start loving that and I start using other people that God's created, I've missed the point. In fact, it seems to me that the futility in Ecclesiastes chapter 2 about work has to do with the fact that you're thinking about work as an end itself. Work is not an end itself. I will never be satisfied if I place 100% of my effort on work that completely gives me lasting satisfaction and fulfillment. I'll never be satisfied because work is never going to be done. There will always be more to do. There will always be something else to achieve. That doesn't mean work is bad. It just means it's not the end itself. It's a means to an end. If I view work as a means to an end, if I view my life as serving God and that's where my goal is, and my work helps me do that, then I'll be able to enjoy the way God designed it. The benefits of working in my vocation, of using the abilities God's given me, and experience that satisfaction, Ecclesiastes 2:24 talks about. To know that I'm satisfied with my work, and that comes from God. But if I live my life focused on just the things I can get from working, I'm going to realize that I'm missing out on relationships with people that God has created. I think about it in light of what Jesus says. As we read in Mark chapter 8, verse 36, he's talking about discipleship, and he says, "What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? For what will a man give in exchange for his soul?" Now you see the value proposition there. Jesus is saying, there's no thing that you have that's as valuable as a soul. What could you give in exchange for a soul? When you think of that in a family relationship, if you've got an opportunity to influence the soul of your spouse, of your child, of your parents, of your grandparents, whoever it is that matters to you, there is no thing you can have that's more valuable than that. I think that's a challenge for those of us who are parents. There is nothing that's going to be more valuable that you can get from work than the impact you can have on the soul of your child. We can't control what our children will grow up to decide to do, but I can control if I have the impact I need to have, if I spend the time and invest that effort. That I can control. If I'm thinking about a family member that I want to share the gospel with, there's no thing I could have that I could spend my time doing that's more valuable than at least trying to impact their soul. I'll never forget a conversation I had about a decade ago with a young man who had gained a lot. He worked very hard, and he grew up in a family where he had a lot. And he had a father who worked very hard, didn't spend a lot of time with family, but they had everything they wanted. And he said, "You know, growing up, my father gave me every single thing that I wanted." And his voice trailed off a little bit, and he said, "I guess what I really wanted was just to spend time with my dad." Now, one of the reasons I remember that is because we just had our first child. I had just become a parent. So that stuck with me. But it also reminds us of what really matters, what's really important. The relationships we have are more valuable than the things we can get. People are to be loved, things are to be used. And if I serve God, I can use the things that I get, those blessings that I get from work, to bless the lives of people and to reach them and hopefully give them the same message that God has given me of His love and the possibility for redemption. And so here's my challenge for us this week. I want us to think about the priorities in our life. Think about what we spend our time doing. I know all of us are doing different things. We're in different places. This is just for us. I can't make that decision for you. You can't make it for me. We're all focused on this. But imagine little tags, little price tags on each of those things that we do. Have I matched them up with the right value? Have I ordered my priorities where they need to be? Or do I need to make a switch? Have I been placing too much emphasis on this over here, and I need to switch that out with something I've really neglected? Have I been focused on reaching others and living for God in a way that's allowed me to use the things I've gotten from work? Or have I gotten so focused on work and the things that I've got there that I've forgotten about the people in my life? It'll be a challenge for all of us, but I think it's one that's worth taking, and it could help us reorder our lives and our priorities. It may be that this morning, it's beginning to dawn on you how much your life might need to be changed. The good news of the gospel is that each one of us, as we just read in Mark chapter 8, has a soul that Jesus died to save. And the price tag on us was determined by God when he sent his son to die for us. There's a value there that's not from how great we are, but how much God loves us. If you need to become a child of God, if you need to put Christ on in baptism, you can do that this morning. That's the best decision you could ever make, and it's the best way we could ever start a week together, celebrating that. It may be that you need to reorder some things in your life, and that you need prayers and encouragement to do so. If you'd like to pray with a couple of our shepherds, you can go right out that doorway. There'd be a couple of them there after service who'd love to talk with you. But it may be that you need our church family to pray with you. If there's any way that we can help, please come as we stand and as we sing together.